This is Access Radio Chicago, AM 750, WNDZ, Portage, Indiana, Chicago.
The views, opinions, and beliefs expressed on this radio program by the hosts, co-hosts, guests, and or callers do not necessarily reflect those of this radio station and its ownership. The following program, Golfers on Golf, is paid for by Rory Spears Sports Communications Limited and guests.
Welcome to Golfers on Golf Radio, hosted by Ed Stevenson, Phil Berger, Rory Spears, and Len Zien, Chicago's favorite foursome.
All right. Hey, as you heard in the intro, the show is Golfers on Golf. We're going to bring you the world of golf from a Chicago area perspective for the next hour. Thanks for tuning in. Here in studio this morning, I'm PGA professional Ed Stevenson alongside lifetime PGA member and former touring professional Bill Berger and sports journalist Rory Spears. We have Illinois Golf Hall of Famer and journalist Len Zien on the line. The eight guys, it's foursomes all together, and here we are in September. Hard to believe. Summer's gone quickly. Summer weather's still here in Chicago. I know we're looking at highs in the mid-90s coming up next couple days, part of the Labor Day weekend. But we've been talking all year about things that will be happening coming up in September, not the least of which is going to be the LIV, the Live Tour, returning to Rich Harvest Farms in September. And that's been exciting. I know it was a great event last year, and I know it's going to be a big focus of the Chicago golf scene in the weeks ahead.
Yeah, Ed, it sure will be, and we want to remind everyone, tickets now available at livegolf.com. You can go in there, and if you're still looking to buy some hospitality, there's very little remaining at this point, but you can still get it. And this segment of Golfers on Golf Radio is sponsored by Live Golf Chicago and livegolf.com, where you can find tickets. Some exciting concerts coming up after play on Friday and Saturday night. Nelly will be there on Friday, and another exciting band coming on Saturday. And to learn more about who it is, we encourage you to visit livegolf.com.
Well, hey, also coming up and generating some conversation and excitement is this little event called the Ryder Cup. You know, certainly dominating conversation recently is the debate that always comes with the captain's picks. And, hey, before we really get any further into that, Len Zien, you've been, paying attention to these international events and all things golf for a long time. Anything surprising on the U.S. side for the picks from your perspective this year, Len?
Well, you know, when I first looked at the picks, I thought, well, it'll be a good team. It wasn't exactly the 12 guys that that I would have wanted. I was really shocked that Keegan Bradley wasn't on that team. I think that was the most glaring thing for me. I don't think if I was the captain, I don't think I would have picked Justin Thomas. I mean, he finished the year. You know, he's a great player and has been a great Ryder Cup player. But he did finish the year. He didn't have the greatest year. And you know that Ryder Cup should be more a case of I think getting rewarding good play. Zach Johnson had his reasons, and I can't really. Hard to second guess Justin Thomas on anything, but I was. It'll be interesting now this next weekend. We see what Luke Donald will do with the European team, and that's going to be a lot different team than they've had than the Euros have had before, with no Sergio Garcia or Lee Westwood, mainstays of that team in previous years. But I was glad just on a personal thought. I thought it was a good idea to have. For Zach to pick a live player, and because Brooks Koepka certainly deserved to be on that team. I mean, it would have been ridiculous to not have a player that caliber on the American side. So we'll see where we go from here. I'll be watching carefully to see what happens in the this is the last weekend of qualifying for the European team. It'll be interesting to see what names Luke is going to have up on his roster for the matches when they come up in Italy.
And, of course, Len, you never know. Just the things that come down to team chemistry and some of those intangibles. You're right. I think when looking at Justin Thomas. He finished, you know, 71st place in the FedEx point standings. You know, he so ultimately missed the playoffs. He missed the cut in three of four majors. So for a lot of people, the numbers just weren't there. Of course, you know, it looks like the captain was putting some weight into, you know, into past experience and his performance in past Ryder Cups. But, yeah, you mentioned Keegan Bradley. Of course, Cameron Young was maybe in the mix. Denny McCarthy. Lucas Glover, who was 16th in the points overall, and had won twice on tour late in the year, so he was someone who was a little bit hot. But you know, I guess you know, experience matters, and you know, having the in some ways the pedigree to have been on that international stage and know how to deal with the nerves. We'll see if that pays off for the captain and for the U.S. team.
Well, Ed, Billy, and Len, I've got to ask all of you. I know that the people that are defending the Justin Thomas pick to this team are trying to say, well, this guy was born for this type of event. They're trying to make him out to be the American version of a guy like Ian Poulter. And I'm sorry, I just don't see that.
You know,
it was interesting. My Facebook post had a lot of people. I was amazed how much response there was. They called Zach picked a good old boys team, you know, good young boys team. Called it a boys club, and you know, it sure kind of seemed that way. I mean, Keegan Bradley is 37. I guess that's old by those standards. There, I don't know. Lucas Glover is a veteran player who played awfully well at the end of the season. He would have been a good sentimental pick for a team like that, I think, although I think if it was coming down to me, I wouldn't have picked him either. But I don't know. Certainly an interesting, one of the more interesting selections of Ryder Cup teams in recent years, I think.
Billy, is 37. I don't know. Does that sound old or young to you?
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm not commenting on that, you know. That's the military secret on age, you know. You don't divulge that stuff. But, you know, getting back to that Lucas Glover, and that, you know, there's a guy, he is a real journeyman. You know, he had some good playing way back. I don't know the exact number of years, but then whatever changed, marriage or family life, and then he kind of fell off the board for a while.
But he's a good comeback story, Billy.
But he really has come back strong. I definitely would have picked him. You know, he's been playing pretty steady the last couple months for sure, and the last couple year and a half or so.
No doubt, Billy. And you know, boys club or not, the stats on or the record for Thomas in international play, he's 6-2-1 in previous Ryder Cup appearances and 10-3-1 in President's Cup.
Wow.
So overall, you know, I think it's, this is what makes sports fun, right? We can debate the numbers and the sentiment and everything else, and yet they still got to go out and play. So the proof will be in the pudding, or perhaps in the putting, as the case may be.
Yeah, that you know, very much the case. And you know, going back to what Len said, you know, there are some people that are saying that Ryder Cups, President's Cups, are getting to be these old boys club type thing. You start seeing so many of the same names surface, and you know, all these captains. You know, how many times are, you know, guys like Zach Johnson, Davis Love, Fred Couples, and all of these people going to be rolled out, or even Tiger at some point when he can't play, which is pretty much all the time now, going to keep getting pushed on as vice captains of these teams. And it would be nice if some of the guys who some people would say got snubbed had a chance to be a part of the team, at least in that direction, if that's what they wanted to be.
Yeah, well, it's hey, it's going to be fun no matter what. You know, Rory, I can't believe we made it really this far into the season with, you know, normally I keep a tally of how many shots you take at Tiger Woods, and here we are. We made it to September, and Len, I don't know. I'd say if I were taking the over-under, wouldn't you? It's been the under this year. Tiger's been out of sight, out of mind for Mr. Rory Spears.
way under. Well, he's not. As I understand, Tiger won't even be at this Ryder Cup. I understand he's staying home. I heard that just recently, and I was surprised. I hope that, I don't know that that's the case. I don't know whether I hope for it one way or the other. But a Ryder Cup without him around, that's always a story during that event, one way or another.
Well, guys, you know, we've talked a little bit and already touched on the fact that we have the LIV Golf Tournament coming to town September 22 to 24, back again at Rich Harvest Farms in Sugar Grove. And, you know, whether it's the PGA Tour, USGA events, PGA of America, LIV Golf, anything else, you know, a lot of people come out to these tournaments and they see the hospitality tents or at this point at the BMW a couple of weeks ago, the three-story structure that was almost as tall as the clock tower at Olympia Fields. But there's press tents and merchandise tents and beverage stands and trying to get the fans in the best place to see the golf and giving the opportunity for those still walking around the grounds to have an opportunity to get what they need and see the golf as well. And to tell us a little bit about setup of tournaments and how these things come together in advance and so forth is our next guest, Doug Habgood from the Par 5 Group, longtime formerly a part of the Bruno Sports Event Management Team. And Doug, welcome to Golfers on Golf Radio.
Good morning, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Good morning.
Well, Doug, I know that as part of what you do with the Par 5 Group, you're still overlooking tournament sites and trying to how to maximize them for the experience of everybody that that goes there. And tell us a little bit about your company and how they've worked with LIV Golf so far this year.
Yeah, so Par 5 Group, we formed a company because of our belief in LIV Golf when it began. And we've been fortunate to be able to manage their U.S. events since the beginning. So we have a great variety of employees. We named ourselves Par 5 because we have five partners, and we started with five events, and we had about 5 minutes to come up with the company name. So that's how we got there. So that's the quick backstory. But, yeah, you know, we kind of snuck in here a few months ago. You know, we've been planning – you know, ever since the event ended last year. And, you know, it's a lot of fun. This is a great venue. It's a great sports town. And the players love coming back to Rich Harvest Farms.
Doug, let me ask you this. You know, you can ask any tournament director, when does planning for next year start? And they'll always tell you it's on the Monday after the tournament, unless there's been a Monday playoff, and then it's on Tuesday after the tournament. So how much do you and your team go in and immediately start compiling the feedback of what worked well and everything from the location of everything on the grounds, but how the spectators got around the property and everything else as soon as the event is over?
Yeah, I think, you know, we actually start taking notes as soon as we get on the ground, right? So there's things that go in that, you know, we might have changed or we see opportunities for growth. But it's, you know, there's a lot of people involved in this and there's a lot of audiences that we're trying to take care of. You know, it's the fans, it's the competition, it's the media, it's the corporate sponsors, it's the grounds crew. So all of that has to come into the planning. And all has to come into, you know, one great week here in September.
Well, Doug, let me ask you this. I'm sure you've been out to Rich Harvest Farms. Tell us a little bit about the great opportunities or maybe even some challenges it might present in strategically locating everything around the grounds. At least I know you got a lot of acres to work with out there. But tell us what it's like to try to set up a property like Rich Harvest Farms for professional golf.
Well, I'll say to you, and I apologize if a forklift drives by, but I'm out here right now, and it's a nice place to office every day. But this is a wonderful venue. Obviously, we have tons of parking enclosed. You know, a lot of events have to park off-site and shuttle in, and that, you know, brings a whole bunch of different challenges. So we can bring our guests right up to the front door. they come in and they can experience the range. And if you haven't been to a live event, you need to come for what we basically call the pregame, because the entire field is on the range at one time. So as you guys know, with a PGA Tour event with the staggered tee times, you know, you don't really get to see them all in one place at one time. But we got the music up at about 8 out of 10. We got the whole field out there, and it's a great way to start off your day. Then the fans typically migrate into our fan village, which is right off of the 18th green, which has a number of different activities for all ages, including a petting zoo this year brought to you by the Range Ghost. So you don't see that at every event. And then as they continue out on the golf course, they'll find the new party hole build out that started in late July, which is surrounding our 17th hole, a par three. Lots of public viewing areas, concessions, video screens, all sorts of things that the fans will enjoy. It's quite the atmosphere out there.
Yeah, Doug, I've got to imagine that, you know, certainly you have experienced and great logistical minds looking at things that hopefully the fan never has to think about, the topography, you know, which areas maybe drain a little better. You know, you start thinking about site circulation, and I'm sure you've got, going into any event, you've set up a really good plan for how people are going to move from amenity to amenity and area to area. But then, of course, you put it to the test. People show up, and people do what people do, right? They end up they become the water test and how they move through there. How hard is it ahead of time to try to anticipate what real circulation is going to be like? And do you end up being a little surprised sometimes, or usually do you find that all that planning pays off and people move through the site as expected?
Yeah, no, it is kind of amazing, you know, when you, especially for me, I remember coming here the very first time, and you know, it takes a while to learn this golf course, not as a player, but just logistically and just the movements and crossing water bodies and all those things. And, you know, we built a concession stand out by our sixth green. And, you know, I was thinking, I don't know if anybody's going to make it out here. And next thing you know, we had lines and we had to add restrooms. And so those are the things. You know, the nice thing is that we've got a great group of partners here that react very quickly. We have a lot of eyes and ears on the golf course, from our volunteers to staff and even feedback from the fans. You know, we're getting immediate feedback, and we can respond to that. So it's always being fine-tuned. You know, I think we all wish we could, you know, build this perfect plan and it would go, you know, seamlessly, but it doesn't. And that's sort of the nature of the business. We always want to improve and really want to impress people. And I think that's what we get the most joy out of, is when they come in and they don't have to say anything. You can see it in their eyes. And, you know, live golf is different. I've been around PGA Tour, Champions Tour, LPGA for a long, long time. And, this atmosphere is unlike anything else, and not to mention having some of the best players in the world. So it's a great package.
Well, it's got to be fun and just a different way. I mean, live golf has been a different way of thinking for the fan experience altogether. But I've got to imagine, again, as you're doing what you do, I know we on this show, we talk to a lot of golf course architects, and they'll talk about things like, you know, sight lines, where the sun's going to be setting, prevailing wind. I imagine you're thinking about even how sound is going to move through the property and proximity. I guess for someone showing up at the event who's just going to show up, enjoy it, and never think about all the planning that went into it, what are some of the things that your group's considering when they first look at a site that might maybe surprise, you know, our listeners or someone just attending the event?
Yeah, I would say, I've learned about some apps that I didn't know existed. I was out with one of our partners recently who has an app that shows the path of the sun, to your point. So we look at that when it comes to announce booths and LED screens. We don't want those to get washed out. We want to try to provide the most shade that we can. And then, you know, the party hole brings in new challenges, right? So that place is going to have the volume up. But we have holes in close proximity. And by the way, we have speakers on every tee and green anyway, but they'll be competing, playlists, if you will. So anyway, that's a little bit of a balance, but, you know, again, I think there's so many factors in this that, you know, are drilled down on and analyzed. But, you know, I think we've got a really good deal here. Coming back is great to come back to an event. You know, we've been to a lot of new sites, and those are always a challenge, and we'd like to go back to sites. But, you know, this one really flowed very well. The crowds out here were amazing. And it always helps when you have, you know, the four aces and Cam Smith on the podium at the end of the day. So we're looking forward. That's kind of a hard, you know, show to follow up, but we'll see. We're going to do our best.
Doug, do you have to, shall we say, create a plan A and then a plan B? I mean, Mother Nature can do crazy things to golf tournaments, and all it takes is a Monday or Tuesday storm, a limb comes down on a hospitality structure, or even your prime source of parking is a field, and then all of a sudden when 6-7 inches of rain come down, it's too muddy to put cars in there, and then you got to figure out where you're going to park everybody. So is part of the setup creating two plans just in case, shall we say, disaster strikes?
Yeah, I wish we only had two. We have multiple plans. It's weather related, and it's not always rain. It could be severe heat. You know, it's colder than what you're used to. So all those things have to come into play, but I feel like we've got great contingencies, you know, just to tell you guys what life is like for an event organizer, and we're kind of cursed with this, but if it rains hard around here, we come in early and we're out driving the parking lots to see how they perform. We go around the golf course to see if there's any standing water where we plan to have a concession or a restroom or things like that, so we just avoid those issues. But yeah, there's a number of contingencies, and you know, we feel like we're ready for anything. And trust me, pretty much everything has happened. So again, we've got a great team that gets together and looks at this, and you have to weigh in all those factors again, right? So let's say we're having a weather event, so that affects competition, that affects potentially our TV time, that affects our gate time. That means we're working with media in terms of communicating that. You know, parking lots are adjusted. Shuttles may come into play. So, yeah, it's a great challenge, but we really like the footprint that we have here and know that we have some flexibility to kind of run through a number of different scenarios.
Well, Doug, I know one of the most important challenges that your team faces at every tournament, and I'm sure Len Zeem would agree with this, is where's that media tent going to be in relation to the players coming off the golf course? And but anyway, it is 10:24. We're talking for a few more minutes with Doug Habgood of the Par 5 group, that is event management. They set up professional golf tournaments, including working with the LIV Golf Tour, and are setting up Rich Harvest Farms for the tournament coming September 22 to 24. Len Zeem is on the line with us from beautiful sunny Sarasota, Florida. Lenny, what do you got for Doug?
Well, I tell you, there's one thing that kind of strikes me here. The theme is that LIV is so different, and it's golf, but only louder. Their slogans, and all that. So it cries out to me as to what you've been around golf, all kinds of different golf for a long time. But what would be the biggest challenge, the most difficult thing coming to a place like Rich Harvest, which in with a tour that does things all things differently. And I think it's great what I've seen of LIV, but what would that throws different challenges at you? What would be the biggest challenge, just as far as holding an event at Rich Harvest? Is there one thing that pops out at you, Doug?
No, I think we're very fortunate here, and I think we've got a lot of things that make this place exciting. Last year we realized, didn't take much, but we're in football season, so we started promoting tailgating, which you don't normally do at a PGA Tour event. Mm-hmm. That's really the thing that we enjoy, is like things that we never dreamed would ever become relevant or relevant. You know, to think of putting speakers all over the golf course and having a, you know, a driving range that, you know, just short of a concert in itself is really kind of cool. And then we've got some big acts coming here post-round that I think people are really going to enjoy. We have Nelly on Friday night and Tiesto on Saturday, and that's all included in the ticket price. So I just think they really set a great atmosphere for the fans. We've seen a lot of young families that attend these events and have a great time. There's kids getting face paint, getting their face painted. You know, there's a jungle gym for them. Just I've never done that before, but it works. And so we try to create a very welcoming atmosphere here. It's very laid back. The players are extremely engaging. I've never seen a player in a bad mood from day one, and I'm not making that up. They just really enjoy being out here. They really love the crowd, and it's a great experience.
Well, Doug, before we let you go to enjoy your holiday weekend, is there anything you can tell us about what tournament goers to Rich Harvest Farms are going to see when they get out there that they might enjoy doing and will want to make as part of their day when they're out there on the grounds?
Yeah, no, I think, you know, a couple things I'll just point out is that, you know, our tickets are under $50 for adults. Kids 12 and under are admitted free, as well as the military. So, again, it's not a huge burden on the wallet to come out and enjoy live golf. I would encourage everyone to go out and experience the party hole, stick around for the concert. And, you know, the other thing that we have that's a new wrinkle here is that we have a Ryder Cup player on live golf, and his name is Brooks Koepka. And the week after Rich Live Golf Chicago, he's off to compete in the Ryder Cup. So I think this will be a great send-off for him. I know he'll be super focused and working on his game, and, you know, maybe he gets to the podium.
All right. Well, Doug Habgood of the Par 5 Group, tournament organizers and setup team, thanks for joining us today. And, Doug, we hope we get a chance to see you out at Rich Harvest Farms in a couple of weeks. I know a lot of people that went out there last year and had a good time are looking forward to getting back out there again. So go enjoy your holiday weekend, and thanks for jumping in with us here at Golfers on Golf Radio for a few minutes this morning.
Yeah, I appreciate the opportunity, guys, and look forward to seeing you out here soon.
Okay.
Thanks, Doug.
It is 10:28. We are going to take our break, and we will be back with Sam Hahn, the CEO of Lab Golf Putters, who is finding a niche in the golf market and also finding some very happy players on the PGA Tour that are using that product right after this. Erin Hills, one of Wisconsin's top public golf destinations and a top 100 rated golf course, is ready to welcome golfers to a championship golf experience. Erin Hills is where you can enjoy walking on the rolling hills of the Kettle Moraine area just northwest of Milwaukee. Erin Hills has already hosted four USGA championships, including the U.S. Amateur and the 2017 U.S. Open. Now, a fifth USGA championship is coming in 2025, and this time it's the ladies' turn when the Women's U.S. Open arrives. It's also one of six U.S. Open courses open for public play. Now at Erin Hills is the 63,000-square-foot putting green, the Drumlin, open for unlimited use for those with a scheduled tee time. While at Erin Hills, you can stay in rooms over the Irish pub or in one of the several cottages right on property. During the warm days of summer, enjoy beverages like a Fescue Rescue or a cold Erin Hills Pilsner. So book your tee times now, because tee times and rooms are going quickly. So book your play and stay by calling Erin Hills at 866-772-4769 or visit erinhills.com. Misswood Golf Club, located on Renwick Road in Romeoville, is one of the Chicago area's finest public golf facilities, where golfers find a commitment to excellence by the owners, the McWethy family. Mistwood Golf Club, designed and renovated by architect Ray Hearn, is a links-style golf course with 20 sidewall bunkers like those found in Scotland or Ireland. Mistwood has played host to several championships, including the state amateur, and it's the yearly home of the Illinois Women's Open. The driving range and performance center comes with natural grass hitting areas and indoor hitting bays, perfect for lessons, practice, or club fittings. Before or after your round, stop in and enjoy the bar and grill in the Performance Center or dining in McWethy's Tavern in the main clubhouse. So make your tee times today by calling 815-254-3333 or visit online mistwoodgc.com.
You talk about this week as you head into Atlanta.
Yeah, just struggled a bit this week, but happy to be going to Atlanta and starting Tuesday.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're looking forward to having Sam Hahn, the CEO of the Putter Cum Lab Golf, on our show next week. We want to get some thoughts from you about that putter of yours and how you guys got started with that.
Yeah, no, it definitely has been a godsend for me. Changed my life the last few months. So I just ordered one and loved it after seeing Adam Scott putt with it, and went from there.
Was it a big adjustment for you to settle in with that?
Yeah. It took a couple hours, couple weeks actually, hours in the garage and then on the putting green. But it's been a good change.
What do you? How much did you?
All right,
change
that
your
is
stroke,
Lucas
or,
Glover,
I mean,
one of the hottest players on the PGA Tour
had
here to
change.
Wrap up the season. And
that sounds like quite a resounding endorsement there, Rory.
Yeah. Well, pretty much. He told me that the lab putter has saved his career on the PGA Tour, and to tell us a little bit more about how he is working with Lab Golf is the CEO of the company and Highland Park native Sam Hahn. Sam, how are you this morning?
Pretty good, Roy. How are you, buddy?
Hey, we're doing good, and thanks for getting up on the West Coast to talk to us here on the holiday weekend. But it's got to be exciting times for you and everybody who designs your clubs and promotes them to see somebody use your putters on the PGA Tour and have the recent success that somebody like Lucas Glover has had.
It's been an absolute thrill for everyone involved. We, don't have to answer on all the Facebook threads. Well, if it's so good, then why aren't the tour players winning with it? And now they are.
Well, Sam, we had you on the show a few years back, and I know it was different times then for the company, but it seems like you've come out with more models, and you're into a different facility now. Tell us how Lab Golf has kind of grown through from maybe right before and through and during the COVID era.
Yeah, I mean, it's been an exponential journey. We, the company started in Reno. I can't remember where we were based when last time I was on your show. Were we in Reno or had we moved to Eugene yet?
Yeah, you were in Oregon, but I think you were maybe in the process of searching for a new location.
Yeah, so we moved to Eugene in early 21, I think, and moved into like a 4,000 square foot facility. And now a few years later, we're in a almost a 30,000 square foot facility. Back then, I think we had 12 employees, and now we're getting pretty close to 60. So it's just been a crazy thing. And you mentioned the COVID boom, and there's no question but that we wouldn't have. It probably would have been a slower, a slower grind without what happened to the golf industry over COVID. And one of the interesting things that we're finding out is that the COVID boom, at least as it relates to rounds and other hard goods and everything, has started, it peaked out and it's on the way, kind of leveling itself out. And we're not doing that. And it's exciting to know that we're just growing legitimately based on the tech and the product and on the merits of the work that we've done.
Well, Sam, I got to tell you that when I first got introduced to your product by a good friend of ours, Larry Spala, the longtime media chairman and member at Olympia Fields. You know, he found some mini tour players using your products down in Florida, and he called me up and he says, you know, you got to see this. And he said, you know, when you first see them, don't be too surprised. They look a little different. They're not really a traditional almost looking putter, but yeah, you still have got those putters, but you've expanded the line. Tell us how many different, shall we say, shapes and sizes that Lab Golf putters are now coming in.
Well, first off, that's a very sweet way to put it, that it's not a, quote, traditional-looking putter. Yeah, the original directed force is ridiculous-looking. It's a big, big giant anvil on a stick, and we still, that's still our baby. That's still, you know, from a strictly technical standpoint, the most technologically advanced putter in the world. But it is a lot to look at and a lot to carry around, and so, you know, it was clear that at some point it would benefit everybody to make a few designs that were a little easier on the eye and a little bit less of a transition. So we've got the Mev, which is sort of a fangy-looking thing that seems to be, I think, is the most popular out on tour. That's the one that Adam and Lucas both use. And then earlier this year, we came out with the Link, which is sort of an interpretation of an answer style putter, but still utilizing our line of balance technology. And, you know, what's funny is, you know, for years we had plenty of people saying, like, look, you know, the science makes sense, but there's just no way I'm putting that thing in my bag, in regards to the directed force. And what we're finding is that the other putters, the Mez and the Link, are sort of serving as like a gateway drug to the directed force. Because people will, you know, get the Mez or the Link and have the experiences they have. And then kind of once you're hooked on the tech and you realize how easy these things are to use, you know, then the question is, well, they're saying the DF is better. How much better can it be? And so they end up with the DF. We also find that it's pretty rare, not never, but rare, that people who started with the DF, our original customers, they like getting the new models and they like having options and stuff, but they almost always go back to the DF.
And Sam, you know, it sounds like it's interesting. We know beauty's in the eye of the beholder, and there's always going to be that part of putting. Something's got to look good to your eye. Certainly results will reinforce that and can make anything look good to your eye. But I guess regardless of the model, the core philosophy and even where the name Lab Golf comes from doesn't change, right? The approach from a science and technology standpoint, regardless of the style of the head, really has been pretty consistent for you guys, right?
Correct. Yeah, that's our whole thing. Every putter that we make is going to be lie angle balanced, which means that the putter is balanced to stay square both at address and throughout the stroke to the arc that you're swinging it on. And there's a misconception that we that the putter stays square to the target. That would be a physical impossibility without, you know, some magnets and some fun trickery there. But, no, it stays square to the arc. And yes, no matter what putter we make, they're all going to, employ that technology.
And, you know, I understand that's part of it, but, you know, certainly with the putter head options there too, but, something you also use are press grips. And I guess for listeners or those of us who aren't maybe familiar with press grips, how does that make a difference?
So the press grip is it doesn't necessarily make a difference on a traditional putter, although it can. The press grip was designed just as for the ergonomics. So the way that we get them to balance the way we do is about where we locate the shaft. And, you know, if you look at the DF or the Mez, it's really pronounced. The face is way in front of the shaft. So if the shaft was, you know, just kind of 90 degrees from the ground with the face in front of it, you know, that would be a lot of onset, meaning that because the face is so in front of the hands, what you end up with is issues with the face not rounding the corner before the hands do. So unless you're sort of like a Tommy Gainey, Tommy Two Gloves, who really over-rotates that putter, an onset head's not going to be any good for anybody. So what Bill did when he designed the putter was he located the shaft where he did, the tip of the shaft, but then he leans it forward so that the top of the shaft is now back over the putter face like it would be for anyone else, which is half the battle, but now you got a crooked shaft. So in order to mitigate that, the shaft is leaning forward, and he designed a grip that then leans back. So now with our putters, your hands are right over the top of the face like they would be with any other putter, But you still get to locate the shaft where we do in order to achieve line angle balancing. So it's an ergonomic thing as much as anything. But there's, you know, a lot of people, A, play putters with too much loft, and then B, add loft through impact. So we've definitely seen people have some success with their traditional, you know, Odysseys and Titleist putters and all that, put a press grip on and find that the ball does roll a bit better.
Well, it, you know, it's amazing. I think for decades and just really throughout the time golf's been played, plenty of people have been happy to both play with and spend a lot of money on equipment that actually doesn't really fit them. And the game of golf is hard enough, let alone to have equipment that's not not giving you every edge possible. We mentioned the COVID effect and the boost in rounds and you know, a lot of that may be whether leveling off or not. The certainly had a growth and interest in the game. I think the other thing that happened during COVID is a lot of people became very comfortable with doing things remotely and being in a remote environment. And I know one of the things you offer, customization. You know, it makes so much sense that a runner wouldn't buy the wrong size running shoes. You know, for a golfer to go and actually have a fitting, which can be done in person, and have a putter that fits, but also be able to get a fitting done remotely, just makes sense so that you have a putter that's actually working for you. I know you offer a free remote fitting for our listeners. How, can you give them a bit of an insight into how that remote fitting works?
Yeah, it's awesome. We, you know, one of the things I always found interesting was that prior to lab, like I'd done, you know, I'd been through some pretty intense and technologically advanced fittings before. Notably, Adele had a very, very in-depth fitting process that, you know, was super hardcore about aim. And they had a bunch of different necks and shapes and lines and dots and everything that you would sort of test out. And what I had noticed was that you'd get fit for a putter and it fit awesome for, you know, 2 weeks until you miss a couple of important four footers and now it looks like hell. And, once I got into lab, I realized that the fitting industry, the whole thing is just way overdone. You know, it's a lot of marketing to sort of micromanage, you know, this 0.5 inches of launch, you know, right after the putter strikes the ball. And, putting a good roll on the ball is obviously important, but the most important thing by far is squaring up the face. That's really all that matters. The roll we can figure out, pace, all the other things we can figure out, but the hard part about putting is keeping the face square. So in order to do that, what we've figured out is that the best chance you have to keep it square is if you're comfortable. So our remote fitting is like super duper simple. You can do it from your own home. You do it with your favorite putter. And we have you standing in a very specific location relative to like a hard 90 degree angle, like a door jamb or a window frame or something like that. And then we just watch this video and make sure that you're comfy, that you're not fighting your own setup. You're not crowding the ball too bad or too far from the ball. We find a length and a lie, and that's it. And the video itself, you know, to watch the instructional video is about 2 minutes. Shooting your video is about 30 seconds. You send it in, we send you your specs, and then you get to go online and figure out the rest of the options that you might like, the colors, the lines, the different shafts, different grips, things like that.
It is 10:44. You're listening to Golfers on Golf Radio. Bill Berger, Ed Stevenson, and Rory Spears here in studio with you this morning. Len Ziem is on the line from the Paul Mayer Studios in Sarasota, Florida. We're talking with Lab Golf Putter CEO Sam Hahn for a few minutes. Lenny, what have you got for Sam about the line of Lab Golf Putters?
I'm always amazed. The first thing I ever do when I get to the PGA Merchandise Show is look at the putters, because I'm amazed every year how innovative, there's always new innovative looking putters, unusual looking ones and all that. And yours is certainly at the top of the heap, right now. What I'm wondering is, looking in your crystal ball, what more can be done? What more do you see happening with putters? Be it with your group or just general, what more can be done with putters down the road to make them, I guess the term is better. That's whatever fits the individual. But there's got to be some, even as innovative as yours is, I'm sure there's going to be some more new things coming out on the market in the coming years.
Yeah, you never know. I mean, our technology, you know, that when I was first introduced to the technology from Bill Presley, the inventor, I mean, I was just blown away. Like, how is it possible that nobody thought of this? How is it possible that nobody thought to balance the putter to go in the direction that we're trying to hit it? And so, yeah, I wonder, too, like, what are we missing? Like, what other, you know, what other things are we missing here? I think that I think it's going to be a minute. I think our technology certainly can be taken further. You know, I would consider lie angle balancing sort of in its adolescence. Starting from a place of a perfectly balanced putter, you know, there's the opportunity to, you know, what Bill calls torque fitting, you know, where maybe you do add a bit of, you know, very, very subtle amounts of torque here to accommodate certain patterns that people have. So there's some opportunity there. I think that one of the places that you'll see innovation, and you know, I mean, Golf Digest just put out an article, or golf.com maybe, the year of the long putter. I think that you're definitely going to see sort of a resurgence and a revetting of different methods. So, you know, one of the things I found incredibly interesting about what happened with Lucas was that, you know, Adam's been using a long putter for a very long time. He's been using our version of the long putter and putting, statistically speaking, exceptionally well for coming up on 3 years now. But people were just kind of used to it. They were used to, you know, seeing him with that thing, and it didn't really occur to them that it was necessarily something you could just switch to. When Lucas won two tournaments in a row, I would guarantee that we, like, broke a global all-time record for broomstick sales in 2 weeks. And so the assumption is that the vast majority of these people buying these broomsticks are new broomstickers. They've never tried it before. And so between that and then what, you know, you saw with Ricky and Wyndham and their, you know, kind of longish putters, even though Wyndham grips it at the top. But, you know, these are things that have been around for a while, but I think they're going to get re-vetted. And people are really going to give the different alternatives kind of a new look. And consequently, those things need to be built differently. And they weigh different. And they, you know, have different amounts of lean and lies. And so I think there'll be a lot of folks, you know, working hard to figure out, is there a different way to do it? I mean, one of the things that I always found interesting that Adam said once is, if you put 10 scientists in a room and told them that they needed to invent an instrument to get to roll a ball from here to there, and you tell them the rules of golf and nothing else, not a single one of them is going to have you standing on the side of the ball. Not one of them, you know. Like, it's just not it's not how our bodies work. It's not how our eyes work. So I'm betting that we're going to see somebody out on tour putting successfully side saddle here pretty soon. With, you know, both eyes looking at the target and the putter on the side of them and rolling it that way. I think we're going to see more broom stickers. I think we're going to see more, what did somebody call it the other day? The Canadian. We used to call it hockey sticking, where, you know, you kind of get a flat putter and grip it with a split hand grip and an open stance like you're hitting a slap shot. I think you're going to see a lot more stuff like that, because there's a lot of different ways. Each person's got their body that has the most optimal way to keep the shaft on plane. And it's not just with two hands together, standing on the side of the ball, making a putting stroke.
Well, Sam, I got to ask you, are we going to see you in 24 down at the PGA merchandise show? I don't think you've had a booth there in the past, but could this next year be a change in that direction?
We turned and tossed and turned about it for a long time. We've been there a few times. We've had three different booths there. The last one was in 2020, and, you know, it was tough. We parked our booths right on the kind of communal putting green down there and pissed off a lot of the other vendors, because, I mean, the lab just took over the whole putting green. And when we started to really think about, at this point, with how popular they are, sort of the infrastructure and staff that we would need to do it proper, and it was just such an enormous endeavor. I mean, I'd need dozens of guys coming down there. The whole company basically would need to come with us to Florida and, you know, set it all up. So this year we decided to pass. We're going to have we just got a bunch of other things going on, too, with all the growth that we need to really focus on. And the PGA show is, at the size that we need it, I mean, that's a one person's full-time job, not to mention everybody that needs the help. So we decided to use our resources for growth. But we'll have a couple guys down there walking around. And hopefully I'll make the trip this year because I do enjoy the show.
Well, it'd be great to see you in Orlando, Florida. And I know, Sam, that another thing that's gotten a lot of publicity, especially it seemed to start at Wyndham Clark's win at the U.S. Open, but several winners in a row right after that using the Superstroke putting grip. And there's so many people. That grip sold out for a while. And I'm sure if there's do you get requests from people say, hey, can I get this new hot grip on my lab golf putter? I'm sure that and putter grips in general have changed. I looked at one I had regripped that sat in the closet for years and how thin that grip was to see, you know, a lot of putters now come with what you'd call a mid-size grip, and some guys with bigger hands, former football players and people like that, are using those jumbo grips that it takes a lot to squeeze them just to get down to feel a little bit where the shaft is. What grips can you get with a lab golf putter, and how much is the different style, length, and size of these grips affecting putting?
Well, there's we can do it after Ricky and Wyndham and all that. We had a bunch of people. You know, can you jailbreak my lab? Is what they were asking, and which is funny because the jailbreak wasn't even decided. They're designed specifically as a counterbalance putter. That just happened to be, you know, how Ricky got a hold of it. But we had a bunch, and we were lucky enough that our tour reps, good pals with the Superstroke rep out on tour, and yes, they were sold out of them, but we managed to get a few dozen, and we've got some other 17-inch grip alternatives. Garson makes an awesome 17-inch grip. Jumbo Max, some really, very cool other companies out there besides Superstroke that are doing cool things. There's merit to counterbalancing, particularly if you're doing it the way Ricky does. So Wyndham was interesting because he had the 17-inch grip on there. As the story goes, he was former teammates with Ricky. They were screwing around one day, and Wyndham starts filling it up and, you know, says, I want that exact same putter. Well, Wyndham's a much bigger dude than Ricky is, and so he got that same putter that Ricky has, but he grips it at the top, whereas Ricky's got 3 or 4 inches up above his hands. And when you start doing that, you'll absolutely see a change to the pattern and the way that the putter moves. It kind of slows down the hands and lets the putter head get past the hands a little bit easier for most people. We can do it. We do it on the Mez putter. The Mez has a small enough amount of onset that you can get away with it without a press grip. Haven't seen anybody try it with the DF, and I probably wouldn't recommend it unless it's somebody that, you know, already has kind of a pretty pronounced forward press built into their stroke. There's a lot of different ways to get you to move the putter. What we have told our customers in the past is, like, with our stuff, try it straight first. Just try it the way that we design them, because a lot of the things that people do with big grips or extra length or, you know, any number of different ways that people screw around with their putters in order to get best results, those things are what we call torque fighters. You know, different ways that make it easier for people to manage the torque of their putter. If you put a giant grip on a putter, you're not going to feel the torque of the putter, the twisting of the putter head, nearly as much as if you, you know, have like one of those old skinny little Pingman grips on it. And so there's different ways to fight torque. And then, you know, in the case of our technology, we have no torque. So, like I said, we recommend starting with just the putter just as we designed it. If after that you notice, you know, some very consistent tendencies, then we can start to screw around with grips or, you know, any number of other things to produce a more desirable result. But in general, it's rare that we tell somebody, hey, start with our press grip, you know, enjoy the way that it's ergonomically designed as is. It's pretty rare that they come back and say, no, I really want the 17-inch grip and, you know, some counterbalance. But that said, we can totally do it.
All right, Sam, before we let you go, enjoy your holiday weekend. Give us the website, phone number, anything else so people can get more information and perhaps put in an order for their own lab golf putter.
Yeah, so the website is labgolf.com. Because of, you know, the just kind of recent explosion in awareness, we are doing our best to hire and get some folks in, more folks in there with the remote fittings and with customer service. So if you do contact the website, please be patient. Give us at least 4 or 5 business days to get back to you. What you can do is you can purchase the putter without your specs, without the lie angle, and under lie angle, just choose not sure. That way your putter's in the queue, and then while you wait for your remote fitting results, they'll plug it in after the fact so you don't have to wait the extra week on top of that to get your putter. But it's labgolf.com. If you have questions, it's info@labgolf.com. And we're excited to help you putt better.
All right. Awesome. Sam Hahn, CEO, Lab Golf, thanks so much for joining us this morning. And, Sam, we look forward to catching up with you on a golf course somewhere or maybe on your next trip through Chicago.
Yeah, if you're going to be down at the Live event, we'll be there at, what is it, Great Harvest?
Rich Harvest Farms.
That's the one, yeah. We'll be there.
Come see you there.
We'll definitely see you out there. All right, Sam, thanks. Have a great weekend. That's Sam Hahn from Lab Golf Putters and exploding on the market here.
Well, the technology keeps improving everywhere. It's amazing. Lots of ways to get it done and get that ball in the hole. And, hey, I know we're short on time, so, Billy, I'm going to ask you a fast question. And, Len, same thing to you. We know age is a military secret, so I'm not picking you guys for any reason. But you've been around golf for a long time, seen a lot of different methods used. Who was the best putter you've ever seen, and what method did they use? Billy, quick answer there.
Best putter, probably day in and day out, definitely. Probably a long stretch was Casper.
Okay, Billy Casper.
Yes.
All right. And, Len, what do you think? Who was best putter you ever saw? And I'm going to add the caveat of in person.
In person? Well, you know, I think the best putter I've seen is that I can think of is, he was such a great clutch putter, was Tom Watson, I think. Okay. Boy, there's so many you could pick on that, though. And I'm not sure that, you know, Tom was awful good in his day. I guess he was the first name that I caught up with when you brought the question up. It's a great question. I know that deserves more thought on my part, but I'll go with Tom Watson.
Well, you know, Len, that's my answer. I agree with you with Tom Watson. And as you sit here and listen and think about the technology available now, you wonder, hey, in his prime, how much better could Tom Watson maybe been with some of this technology?
Ben Crenshaw from my side. It was amazing to watch him putt a couple holes. I got to play with him at Cog Hill one day on Dubstrad. And, you know, there was a lot of days that he put up good numbers only because he putted so well, because he'd hit the ball all over the golf course, but he could always save his round with his putting.
Well, speaking of putting, I know we're getting close to tapping out here on our 18th hole. It's the hour's gone quickly, as it always does. I'm going to ask guys, I know between the broadcasts, of course, we look forward to seeing you on golfersongolf.com. And Rory, what do you got coming up?
Well, we're going to try to catch up a little bit this week with several stories, some tournament recaps, some things going on at Medina and everything else. But also want to give a shout-out. A week from Thursday, the McWethy Cup, in honor of the late Jim McWethy, the owner at Mistwood. There is a fundraising golf tournament for our veterans out there on September 14th. Check it out at mistwoodgc.com or call 815-254-3333. McWethy Cup, always a great event.
Great. And hey, tomorrow night, debuting on September 3rd, Golf 360. Our friends there will have their latest edition out on Comcast Sportsnet Chicago. And pleased that one of the features will be the Preserve at Oak Meadow, specifically the Greenway Tap, our restaurant in the new clubhouse there. So, hey, we want to thank our guests. We want to thank our producer, Brian, for getting us out to you, the listeners. And, of course, most of all, we want to thank you, our listeners, for spending part of your Saturday morning with us. You can find us online between the broadcasts at golfersongolf.com. And we'll be back on the air next week here on WNDZ. Until then, on behalf of Bill Berger, Len Ziem, Rory Spears, myself, Ed Stevenson, we wish you a terrific Labor Day weekend. Get out, play some golf, and hit them straight.
The preceding program, Golfers on Golf, was paid for by Rory Spears Sports Communications Limited and guests.
Talk it to yourself.